For continuing Maaseh Shimshon, we left off in the sixth section, Chelek Vav, where Shimshon actually meets with a Timni girl, and we ran through Shimshon's speech with her. Let's review it and analyze the words a little bit better. Imri ra'ayati at, ha'im tachpotzi, maybe we should actually run through it this time. We're not in Tanakh, we're in the play over there. You have it over there. So we're going to just run through the text again and then look at it with more depth. Say, beloved, you, would do you desire that I plant my trusted tent in you? Your love is better for me beyond any depth, beyond any comprehension. I am prepared to give before you my complete love. And she answers, Ken Adoni, yes, my master, Ata Shalom Boecha, Asul Mishmatecha, come in peace. I am prepared to dedicate myself to your guidance, to your leadership, whatever you say, I am prepared to do. She continues and says, Im bi chafatzta, ken becha chafatzti. If you desire me, then by the same token, I desire you. And we spoke a lot about that, that in relationships, there's this concept of we reflect one another. If one side feels the other side is with them, then it's easier for them to be with the first side. We tend to reflect what we feel we're receiving. And then they both declare, Matov chelki umana'ima, how pleasant is my portion, chevli yifat mare af saratam, my portion is the greatest portion, master of reasoning. So too, I will thank Hashem this time. Ulam yehi varuch yom alom bati, tofa bo nara, etc. And before we continue, let's go back and analyze what we're actually seeing here. So Shimshon asks her, as his friend, if she will agree to be the place where he plants his trusted tent. And she says yes. So the first thing we see, he speaks about her being the tent. We discussed the word tent being a historically Jewish concept of the home, the idea that the word tent also, ohel, comes from the word yahel, or to give off light. And his hope is definitely that with her, together they will give off light. He speaks about being the trusted tent, ohel ne'eman. That's the first ingredient in any relationship, the feeling that you can trust the other person, the feeling that you have a home to come back to, the feeling that she's not going to run off with his best friend, which she does. And he wants to plant in her, and that's again a term that we find throughout Tanakh, that building a home is like planting a vineyard. The trusted wife in Psalms is described as Eshtecha kegefen poria. Your wife is like the fruitful vineyard. Banecha kishtilei zeitim. Your children are like firmly planted olive trees. The description of the Jewish home is very often like an orchard. So when he says, I want to plant my trusted tent in you, he's using dual terminology. To plant is also the way we often describe a home. You're planting the seeds, right? A person's children are called his seeds, etc. Where do you plant your seed? In your wife. You see, even the description of Israel's return to Israel, the people of Israel's return to the land of Israel is described, Kiv al bachur betulai yivaluch banayich. Just as a man weds his wife and he plants his seed in his wife, so too the people of Israel will return and plant their seeds, plant their future in the land of Israel. So this is a constant metaphor throughout Tanakh. The home is described as an orchard. So when he says, I want to plant my trusted tent in you, that word to plant is a code word we find throughout Tanakh about the home. The tent, yes, that's the reference of the Jewish home. Remember, the possibly non-Jewish woman, Yael, who weds Sisera, or at least who sleeps with Sisera, and then takes over Sisera, is also described as the tent. right? Minashim ba'ol tevorach. She should be more blessed than the women of the tent. The matriarchs are called the women of the tent. So he's asking her, will you stand up to the occasion to be my trusted tent? And then he says, Hine tovim dodich. Behold, your love is better, is so good, it is beyond research. So here, I think we have to open up to Song of Songs. I don't think we did that last time. Where did those words show up? Tovim dodaich. Ki tovim dodech amiyayin. So let's open up to Song of Songs. That's in Shir Ashirim. The fourth chapter. And in the Song of Songs, this term is also found where the beloved encourages her to go together as his bride. Iti mi devanon kala. The fourth chapter of the Song of Songs, the eighth verse. Song of Songs is in writings, is in Ksuvim. You guys have it, Shir Ashirim. It's among the Megillot. Meaning it's in most places it's printed after Job. What do you have? Tell me where you are. Four. So he's encouraging her to wed. And he tells her how beautiful she is and how special she is to him. And we reach the punchline in the seventh verse, Kulach yafa ra'ayati. You are completely beautiful, my beloved. Umumen bach, I find no blemish in you. Itimi Lebanon kalam. And so he encourages her, come with me. Come with me from Lebanon. Itimi Lebanon tavoi. Come with me from Lebanon. Tashuri merosh amana merosh sanir v'chamon mimonot arayot ma'arein emarim. You will be able to look out over the land of Israel from the tops of the mountains of Amana, from the tops of the mountains of Sinir and Hermon, from the houses of lions. Interesting, Shimshon just conquered a lion, right? From the mountaintops of Namer in English is a leopard, yeah? Is a tiger, tigers, yeah? Libavtini achoti chala. And then he tells her, you're overtaking my heart. Libavtini ba'achat me'inach ba'achat anak mitzavronayich. I just look at one of your eyes. I just look at one piece of jewelry you're wearing around your neck. I'm being overtaken. Mayafudu da'ach achoti chala. How great is your love? Now let's compare to our lines. What did Samson say? Right? Hine tovim dodaich. In the Song of Songs, he tells her, Mayafu dodaich, matovu dodaich miyayin. Now we see where he got those words from. That's also in the Song of Songs, the words of the lover to the beloved. Your love is better than the best wine. V'rach shemanach mikol besamim. Your perfume is better than all perfumes. Nofet titov nasiftotaych kala. Your lips are so sweet. Vash v'chalav tachat leshonech. V'rach salmotaych kireach levanon. It's as though you have milk and honey under your tongue. You smell like the beautiful smell of the trees of Lebanon as the wind goes through them, and the beautiful smell, be it the pine trees or I don't know what trees grow in Lebanon, comes forth.
Eretz Lebanon.
What?
Eretz Lebanon.
Eretz Lebanon, right? But we have to continue and wonder if Ramchal isn't alluding to the continuation of the conversation between the two. What does the lover say to the beloved in the Song of Songs? Gan na'ul achoti chala. I trust you to maintain your garden locked. And that's clean terminology for being faithful to him. Throughout Tanakh, the garden is often a reference to a woman's most private parts. So he tells her, I trust you that it will be locked. Gan na'ul mayan chatum. I trust that your stream will be sealed to others. I trust you that you will be faithful to me. Again, he's using clean terminology. Yes.
So God ate
it. Don't take me there. You're right in your question. Yes. In Kabbalistic concepts, there is this concept of the forbidden fruit and Gan Eden, and no, there is such a concept.
The snake and Gan Eden, is that
right? There is such a concept in Midrashim that Cain came from the snake. He didn't come from Adam.
The one that killed Hevel?
Yes, Cain and Hevel. There is such a concept in Midrashim. Yes. I told you the whole story of the Garden of Eden has many levels of interpretations, but that's all things that are way beyond us. That's not for beginners. That's like one day maybe I'll merit to understand it. I don't know. So again, that's perhaps part of what he's alluding to. We have another concept here in the verses in the Song of Songs. He tells her, "Iti mi Levanon kala, iti mi Levanon tavoi." And according to some of the midrashim, Levanon is the description of how the Jewish people had their sin of the golden calf whitened. Levanon, even the temple is called Levanon from the word lavan, white, because malbina vonoten shel Yisrael. The temple has the capacity to cleanse the sins of Israel. That's why the temple is called Levanon. So it's possible that Ramchal is also alluding to this idea. You have a dark history. Your people are our enemies. But now you're converting to Judaism. So itimi Levanon kala, you can come with me and you can cleanse your past. You can still build a future. So again, these two words, tovim dodaich, are taken from the final chapter of conversation between the lover and the beloved as he's telling her, come marry me. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Ramchal took those two words. If we look at the broader picture, there seems to be more allusions going on with those two words. He tells her, I will give you all my love, and we discussed that that's a mistake. When people come to wed, they're sometimes willing to give their complete love, and they're willing to sacrifice their whole life, and that's not a way of getting married. Marriage should be an encompassing love, but a love that encompasses our life, not that deletes parts of our lives. There has to be mutual respect. It cannot be that out of love for her, he's going to turn his back on his people, on his religion, on everything he believes in. That doesn't work. And yet, we find that Shimshon is willing to fully invest in his relationships to the point where he loses his life over his relationships. And here we start seeing that mistake. He says, I'm willing to give my whole love. We said there's a play on words here. Does it mean I will bring close to you, or does it mean I will sacrifice on your behalf? Akriva has dual meaning. And she answers, Cain Adoni. Where do we find those words, Cain Adoni? We find them in Tanakh once. The story is, King David is very upset at his son Avshalom, his son who killed his other son, right? So King David sins with Bathsheba, God curses King David, and then part of the curse that comes true is that his son Amnon rapes his daughter Tamar. They're half-siblings, and then Tamar's complete brother Avshalom decides he's going to take down Amnon. He makes a family party, he invites all his brothers, and in the middle of the party, he signals his servants, and he has the murder Amnon. No court, no witnesses, nothing to discuss. All the other princes come running back. King David hears a rumor that all his sons have been murdered by Avshalom. And one smart person standing there, wickedly smart person, tells him, don't worry, not everyone's been killed. It's only Amnon. Avshalom killed the brother who raped the sister, and he did him in. Happens to be that was the same guy who advised Amnon how to do it. That doesn't matter. Bottom line, what? No. At any rate, Avshalom runs away to his mother's father, meaning his mother was a convert from the city of Geshur. He runs to Talmai, the non-Jewish king, and he hides there until King David is willing to make peace with him. He's scared for his life. He just killed King David's son, right? So he stays there, and David's nephew, Yoav, the son of David's sister, Tzeruya, he knows that King David really wants to make peace with his son, Avshalom. Not sure how to do it. So he goes and summons a smart woman from the city of Tekoa. Yes?
What if you mean there were no witnesses at the party?
I'm saying there were no witnesses to testify against what Amnon did. Even though Tamar came and said that her brother Amnon raped her, in order for a court to punish someone, there has to be witnesses and a warning, etc. I'm saying what he did couldn't be legitimized halachically for Avshalom to kill his brother. Now let's open our Tanakhs to the book of Shmuel, the second chapter, Shmuel B, the 14th chapter. And we see the story. We see the story of how Yoav summons this wise woman from the city of Tekoa, and she tells him the following story. She says, "Save me, my master, the king." And she says, "Well, here's the story. I have two sons. They were fighting out in the field. No one was there to save them, and one killed the other. And now the rest of the family came to me. I'm a widow. The rest of the family came and said, 'Give over the brother. We want to kill him.'" And she says, "I know what they mean to do. They mean to kill the brother so there'll be no inheritors and they'll be able to get the whole inheritance. And then I'll remain without anything. My husband's dead. One son's dead. The two were fighting. One killed the other. And now the family wants to kill the first one and I'll be left with nothing." This is the story she fabricates. The woman from the city of Tekoa. And David tells her, "Go home, and I'll order my people to come protect you. No one should harm your son." So the woman says, "You know, obviously it's not your fault. It's all my fault if anything goes wrong. But you know what? By the time you get your officers to come protect my house, my son could be dead." So King David says, "Believe me, if anyone tries to harm you, tell them you spoke to me, and I'll take care of it." She says, "Look, I want you to remember God, because people will come to you and try to say that they're avenging my son's blood." And King David says, "I swear by God, I won't let a hair fall from your son." So she says, "Can I just say one more thing?" So King David says, "Fine, speak." So she says, "I don't understand. You believed my story? You swore by Hashem. You believe that the people of Israel would actually kill one son in the name of vengeance for another son, and you're willing to protect that son because you say just because one son killed the other son, you know, we shouldn't destroy the whole family. But you know what? Don't you have a relative who's far away, a son who killed another son, and he's not coming back? You know, we're all gonna die at the end, and it's like water that's spilled on the earth. You can't collect it once it's over." But at the end of the day, God lets everyone do tshuva, and why don't you think about what you just said to me, that you won't let one son... I lost one son, fine, but I should lose two? And I came to talk to you because I figured maybe everyone got me to be scared, so I figured I'll tell you a story, and I figured I'll be able to tell you. But I knew you'd stand up like a lion to save me, and you'd protect me. So I figured, okay, so let me tell you, what about your own family? And the king is very smart. And he tells her, "Do me a favor now. Tell me the whole truth. I want to ask you a question now. And tell me a true answer." She says, "Okay, speak." And he says, "Is it Yoav who set you up to all of this?" "My nephew Yoav." So she says, "I swear by your soul, my master, the king, no one can go right or left. It's Yoav who sent me here, and he taught me this whole plot, but we have a good intention." Now let's go back. In the middle of the story, she says to him, "You are like an angel of God." Look at Pasuk Yud Zayin. "I figured I can come talk to you. Ki kimalach Elokim kein Adoni HaMelech. Like an angel of God, so too is my master the king, to hear the good and bad, and God should be with you." Now let's go back to the Timnis. What's her first sentence to Samson? Kain Adoni. The other place the Kain Adoni appears in Tanakh is in the words of the Tekois, the woman of Tekoa, to King David. So is my master to discern between good and bad. You're like an angel of God. What do you think she's alluding to? Maybe she's telling him that you're able to discern between good and bad. You're saying, I'm good, the rest of the Philistines are bad. You're willing to discern. You're willing to take a wife from the Philistine women, convert me, marry me. And he is like an angel of God. If there's one person in that generation who's like an angel, it's Samson with his unusual strength. Only here we have to come back to that game that Ramchal is playing with us. Samson's might seems to be in the physical realm. But where's that brilliant discernment in the spiritual realm? She leads him astray and then, right? She goes off with a Philistine guy. 2 weeks after their marriage, a month after their marriage, she's out with another guy. So maybe this is again Ramchal reminding us this game where Samson seems to be brilliant on the one hand and a great warrior. But on the other hand, that great discernment of King David to actually be like an angel and see between the lines, that's where he brings in these words. Yes, my master, but it's a game. You're so brilliant and not so brilliant. You got it right, but you didn't get it right. You think I'm a faithful wife, but you're about to learn differently. Okay, let's move forward. We again have that Matov Chalki Umana'ima. We discussed that. And Saratam, did we discuss that? Saratam? Did we discuss the verse in Proverbs? Ishaya Fave Saratam? We mentioned it. The verse Saratam in Tanakh appears with a samach, not a sin. This is a play on words. The verse says in Proverbs, Nezem Zahav Be'af Chazir, a gold nose ring and the nose of a pig. And the pig always sticks his nose through dung and dirt. So you have a beautiful nose ring, but what's it on? A pig. By the same token, Isha Yafa, a beautiful woman, Visaratam, lacking intelligence. So before you talk to her, she's gorgeous. Then she opens her mouth and you feel, what a fool. All the beauty is lost, right? So over here, Ramchal plays with these words. He says, Samson says, my portion is so beautiful, af saratam. She's even the master of reasoning. She's so beautiful and intelligence. But he purposely chose the words which describe a woman who is exactly the opposite. She's a woman who has the beauty, but not the intelligence. A play on words. Only again, Samson thinks one way, and he's going to learn the exact opposite, which is repeatedly the theme of the play, where a man can be taken by beauty and even convince himself she's wonderful. Her conversion is sincere. She's brilliant. She's not just gorgeous. She's brilliant. Really, let's see how it plays out. So Ramchal purposely quotes these words where they appear once in Tanakh, Saratam, but now we know where. And Ramchal changes the samach to sin, but you can't miss what he's alluding to. So we discussed that last time. That's a play on words over what Leah said when she had the mighty Yehuda as her son. And we said that that's the way every relationship develops. When a person feels they got something exceptional, that's when they're thankful. When a person thinks they got something extraordinary, that's when they think they lucked out with their spouse. And everyone has to feel like they got something exceptional. That's the way marriage works. Okay, we continue. Shimshon. Ulam yehi varuch yom halom Bati. But this day in which I came shall be blessed. Tofabo nehara, light should shine on this day, v'chanfei shemesh, and the wings of the sun. Tavor en anavo, v'tamish amash, light, song should come on this day. It should remove any darkness or sadness. Ki zod menuchati v'zematzati, because now I have finally found rest. So much of Samson's speech is a play on words from Job. We'll see in 1 second. He's reversing verses in Job. Where Job laments, he takes the verse and reverses it. Where Job says the day should be cursed, he says it should be blessed. The day should be darkened, he says it should be light. We'll see in 1 second the play on words. But the final line. Zot menuchati vaze matzati. So zot menuchati is a verse in Psalm. Zot menuchati adei ad. God says, I finally found my resting place by having the Mishkan, having a place of representation among the Jewish people. We said this is a constant theme in this play where Ramchal quotes verses that describe God's resting in our midst, the Mishkan. And you can't ignore that perhaps he's alluding to the idea that the Jewish home is supposed to be a Mishkan. The home is supposed to be a resting place for God. And Samson achieves the exact opposite, right? There isn't any faithfulness. There isn't any holiness. There is no resting place for God in this union. And that's part of his mistake. When a person is taken by beauty, they forget the responsibility they have in building their home. But the truth is that this is a great insight into what we look for in marriage. This is the conclusion before their marriage. What's his final line? I finally found resting place. And the truth is that in marriage, very often, the greatest gift that we get in marriage is that we have an anchor. We can settle down. Meaning when a person's a bachelor, so then, no, one day I'm in England, the next day in Israel, the next day in South Africa. Life is flexible to the point where it's unhealthy, where you have no anchor. You know, he's a bachelor. He can be everywhere. As you get married and as the kids grow and as you anchor down into community, it becomes much more difficult. You know, we spent 2 years checking out Kochav Yaakov before we moved. Because once it's a family, it's a big deal to switch educational institutions, to switch friends, to switch neighbors. Very hard. You can't just play games with kids. You can't go like a ping pong, you know. So you look into it, you look into it, you research, you verify, and finally you come to the conclusion and pray you got it right. That's one of the greatest blessings of marriage, that you actually do settle down. There's a certain peace that comes with marriage. You go to last night's class, we discussed all the difficulties in marriage. That's also true. There are difficulties. But the great blessing is also there. If one can be faithful and really build the marriage, so then yes, the marriage will represent the greatest peace in a person's life. Everything we said last night, not withholding, with all the hardships, it's still the greatest peace. So now, let's go back. Let's begin by looking at the verses in Job. You guys want to open to Job writings? So, quick overview. What happens in Job? We have this extraordinarily pious person, Eov. And in heaven comes Rosh Hashanah. God tells Satan, have you seen my servant, Eov? None like him around earth. And the Satan says, big deal. You've given him every blessing under the sun. Is it a surprise that he's so faithful to you? Try taking it all away from him. Let's see what kind of faithful servant he is. And God says, okay, you can take everything away, but don't touch him, okay? So his children die, and his animals die, and all his wealth goes down the tubes. And in one day, everything he owns goes down the tubes. And Samson says, blessed be Hashem. And his wife says, how do you say that? He says, you know, God gave us good times, and now God gave us bad times. And we bless him just like when he gave us the good things. And we come to chapter 2, what they call chapter 2, and again it's Rosh Hashanah, and God calls in the Satan and says, have you looked at Job? Look at him, he's still faithful. And the Satan says, big deal, you've taken everything, but you haven't touched him. You know, or bad or v'chol asher le'ish yiten bad nafsho. When a person's about to be hit, he picks up his hands. His hand should get hit and not his face. You're willing to do anything to protect yourself. You just don't want to be hit yourself, right? So everything around Eov was hit, but you didn't let me touch him. Believe me, if I touch him, you'll see him blaspheme. So God says, okay, I'm giving you the right to touch him, but don't let him die. You can hurt him, you can afflict him, but you may not let him die. And the Satan goes out, and Eov gets covered with boils, and people start cursing him, and everyone speaks about him being a lowlife. He loses all his prestige, and at night he has these threatening nightmares, and he can't get a single hour's of peace or sleep, and by day he has a tremendous fever, and his limbs are all covered with these boils that keep hurting him, and he has every waking hour he is destroyed with pain, and his friends come to visit him. All he has left is a little piece of earthenware to scratch himself, and his wife tells him, what are you staying so faithful for? Blaspheme and die. And he tells her, how could you say such a horrible thing? We accepted all the good, we won't accept the bad. And even though his heart has changed, in his mouth he won't say a word bad. And then his three friends come, and they see his terrible state, and they sit down next to him for 7 days just to weep with him. They can't recognize him. His face is so contorted in pain, they don't recognize him. They tear their garments, they sit with him, and they weep. And then, after 7 days, Eov opens his mouth, and he curses his day. And Eov yells and says, Pasuk Gimel, third chapter, Pasuk Gimel, Yovad Yom Ivaled Bo, may the day I was born be cursed. He doesn't curse God. He curses the day he was born. The day in which it was declared that man impregnated a woman, that my father impregnated my wife, may that day be lost. I wish I were never born. Hayom hahu, on that day, Yehoshech, may it be enveloped in darkness. Al drisheu lo amimal, may God never seek out that day. Val tofa alav nahara, may that day never have light. Yigaleu choshech v'tzalmavet, may that day be overtaken by darkness, shadow of death. Tishkon alav anana, may that day be covered with clouds. Yivatu kimchire yom, may it be kicked like those whose days are embittered. Halailahu, that day may it be taken with darkness, with mist. Etc. Let's compare that to Samson's speech. He cursed the day. Samson says, Yehi baruch yom alom bati. May the day I came here be blessed. Tofa bo ne'ara, where Job said, may no light shine on that day. Samson says, may that day be filled with light. Where he says that day shouldn't be seen by the sun, he says that day should be covered by the sun's wings. Where he says there should be no singing on that day, Samson says that day should be filled with songs. Where Eov said that day should be covered with a mist, with a cloud, with a fog, Eov says there should be all mist and clouds should be cleared from the day. So you have an exact reversal of those verses. What was Eov talking about? The day he was born. The day a person gets married, he feels like he is being born again. This is the beginning of life. Everything until now was practice. Finally, he's getting married. Now life begins. And that's what we find in Halacha. Someone pointed this out to me. I never realized. The Halacha compares the day of happiness to the day of sadness. It says the two are the day a person dies and the day a person weds. Just like you mourn 7 days, so do you have 7 days of rejoicing. Just like you have 30 days where the mourning lingers, so do you have 30 days where the happiness lingers. Just like the first day has extreme sadness when a person dies, the first day of marriage has extreme happiness. And this has halachic ramifications as well. So someone pointed out to me that it doesn't compare the day a person's born. You don't have 7 days celebrating someone's birth. You don't have 30 days celebrating someone's birth. You have 7 and 30 in marriage. So you see, the antithesis of marriage is the antithesis of death is marriage. That's a continuum. That's where life really starts. The antithesis of death is not birth. And so where Samson takes these words that describe, he takes the exact opposite, where Job lamented his birth. He says, I wish I were dead. I wish I would have never been born. Worst case scenario, I should have been a miscarriage, but I shouldn't have made it this far. Samson says, wow, life is beautiful. Life was worth living. Life has just begun. And so he reverses all those verses.